You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modge-podge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modgepodge.
Yeah, there's a modgepodge. Whole modgepodge of rumors.
This is a transfer modgepodge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from Orlando, Florida, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXMC channel 157. Yes, we are on a new place, same time, same folks. Andrew Wiebe, Bobby Warshaw, Sam Stachel, David Goss hanging out here in Central Florida. Now finally sunny, 3 days of MLS Combine action, done and dusted. The MLS Super Draft goes down on Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern. MLSsoccer.com and YouTube, you can watch the whole shebang as a whole host of folks start their professional careers in Major League Soccer. So much to talk about on this show. We'll go top five because there are too many picks to narrow down and really push through. We'll break it all down later on after the draft. And we'll talk to Bob Bradley, the head coach of LAFC, sits down with us for a long, expansive interview that touches on Abu Trica, LAFC, new signings that he sort of breaks.
Abu Trica,
my bad. He busts our balls. I was just trying to get you engaged, Dave. I mean, you don't even feel like you're here with us.
Dave, do you even care about content anymore?
I do. I don't understand why Andre.
You changed.
Hashtag content.
I don't understand why Andre Blake just signed a new multi-year contract. That was what I was focused on.
Getting a little bit confused.
Let's not understand.
Some other news going down. Sam Stachel, our very own bird dog.
Bird dog
out there, you know, chasing down some
birds.
Yes.
Like a dog.
You found out some things today. Lee Wynn isn't going anywhere.
Well, according to Brad Friedel, he's not going anywhere.
Maybe
he changes his mind later. I don't know. He said he's not going anywhere.
This very moment.
Yeah. Right now, he's not going anywhere, despite the fact that he asked for a trade earlier this offseason, both before Friedel was hired and after Friedel was hired. So, for now, not going anywhere. But, you know, everyone's got their price, as they say.
Mm-hmm. RSL made a signing. American defender Sean Berry, who you may not know his name. He took off for Europe after he came out of college. But another piece for them in the central of defense. You have Justin Glad. You have Marcelo Silva. You have David Horst. Now you have Sean Berry.
You have Berry. Adam Henley as well.
Right back.
Yeah, that's exciting. Yeah.
Just
another American.
Just
are you listening?
Semi-American.
Are you on the show?
Yeah. What do you mean? We bring up Adam Henley?
I don't know. We haven't. Now we have.
We were talking about center backs. We were talking about center backs.
Yeah, you didn't say Adam Henley.
No, I didn't because he's not a center back.
Yeah, okay. I'm good.
Okay. All right. We've got Adam Henley in there. LAFC signed Callum Malice, which Bob sort of thought he was breaking with us. But, you know, the interview's coming a little bit later. You want to listen to that one. Let's get into it, guys.
Wait, can I just say that's probably the best interview we've ever done?
It's really good.
We didn't really do anything. We just basically put a microphone on
Bob. When you interview Bob, you get to ask like a question every 10 minutes.
And he does his own thing.
And you really aren't sure at all, never sure where he's going to go. He usually starts with what you ask him, and then he's got a lot of thoughts. He takes him where he wants. Make sure you stick around for that. Give us your thoughts on it. LAFC, of course, entering their first ever season in Major League Soccer. They will kick it off. And that at Seattle, then they will host Seattle at Bank of California Stadium to open up their new venue later on. In late April, they have the first pick. Number one, just to give you an idea at home here, LAFC number one, LA Galaxy 2, DC United 3, Montreal Impact 4th, Minnesota United 5th, Orlando City is 6th. Montreal comes back in at 7, New England 8 and 9, and then Real Salt Lake rounds it out at 10. As always, the trade talks are thick and fast leading up to that first pick. Do we think that LAFC has reason to trade? Is there a prospect at number one that's just so can't miss that they've got to hold steady and just go for it? Sam, you reported they've listened to offers. Of course, they've listened to offers. You always listen. You never shut down for these things. If they keep it, who do they take?
Oh, man. If they keep it.
There's not a consensus. That's one thing about this
draft. It's hard to say because, like, you know, they're not saying, obviously. So we're just all doing guesswork here. But I would say they'll take Francis Atuahene. He's an attacking piece. Even though they have some attacking pieces now, they don't have a ton of depth up there. So he's a guy that you can throw in the 80th minute and tell him, hey, run it goal and go make something happen. And he can do that pretty much straight from the jump, in my opinion anyway. So that being said, you know, maybe Bob Bradley doesn't like him as a player and, you know, would never take him in a billion years. But
he did rave about Right to Dream when we were talking to him.
There you go. Listen to the interview. Mm-hmm. So I think, I mean, if I have to guess, that's my guess.
Dave, Bobby, you guys broadcasted these games?
I don't think there's a can't miss guy. Although last year we thought it was Jeremy Ebobese, and he went fourth.
Right.
So clearly we're always wrong, and Abu Dunlady was the talent. It was the right pick by Minnesota, so clearly we're always wrong no matter what happens. But no, there's just holes in everyone's game. The number one prospect is Jao Moutinho, and we don't know what position he'd play at the next level.
I've been told by a few coaches that it's definitely left back.
And I've been told that it's definitely center back, or definitely defensive midfielder, or definitely the left center back in a 3-5-2.
About this draft, these players, the differing attitudes and opinions and levels of scouting that has been done. You know, each team values this in a different way, and I don't think there's any doubt that good players come out of the super draft. You always see every year 7 to 10 at least that end up having a good career, and usually 2 or 3. 4 or 5 maybe that are standouts, that are starters long-term in MLS. But the homegrown program has started to nick away at maybe the top-end quality because so many of those guys get snatched up early. Bobby, you've been in camps. You've been a rookie. You've seen guys come into teams. How hard is it to, after being drafted, come in and impact the squad? Do these guys have to adjust their mindset maybe of where it is now as they enter the draft once they get drafted and actually hit preseason?
It's very hard. There's very few of these players, no matter how good they are, no matter how well they played this week or how well they played in college, who are going to be ready to make an impact on an MLS team. And it goes both ways. Some guys come in slow, they're overwhelmed, they're not technically prepared, or some guys come in naive and are awesome and come back down to earth. So, yeah, to answer your question very bluntly, it's extremely difficult.
What was the moment that you walked in or hit the training field or what have you where you thought, oh, man, you know, my previous swagger was in the past. Now it's the present, and it's the future, and I've got some catching up to do.
I remember mine perfectly. It was our first day outdoors because apparently Texas snows and has storms in January, which I didn't know. So I get off the plane from Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, and it's the coldest day of my life in Dallas, Texas. Practice is canceled for 2 days. The third day, we finally get upside. We play on turf. We play small-sided, then 11v11. It might have been the second day. And I swear to God, guys, I thought I was the best player on the field. I felt so good about the way I played. Breaking lines, I connected every pass, I broke up a couple plays, and our coach, Charles Hymans, calls me to the side and he says, "Ugh, man, I really expected more from you." And he tells me these 5 things that I should have done better. And I don't think I ever recovered as a professional soccer player after that because I was so confident my whole life. I had so much belief in what I was doing, so much belief about the way the game should be played, and I did all these things well. And I had this guy who I thought I admired at the time tell me that I did them all wrong and what I should have done better, and I was like, I don't know anything.
What were those things? What was his?
My pass selection. I mean, I was very good at clipping a pass, so I'd get it from one side, I'd clip it to the other, and he'd want me to play a pass on the ground, which is fine. What are some of the others? I don't even remember because I've honestly tried to block them out.
Yeah.
It's like one of those moments I've been like, this was a bad thing to learn. Unlearn all of them.
Don't make him talk about it anymore, Woody.
Yeah, he was quiet. I was just trying to bring Bobby into the fold here.
Well, now he's going to be quiet.
He was stewing.
There's equal moments. I mean, around this time of the year, there's equal moments of elatement for me and also PTSD about these things, you know, because it was the best. Getting drafted is literally one of the best single feelings you can have up until your 22-year-old life. And then you get there and it comes back down to earth really fast. No, it's a big – you run into the wall really hard.
Yeah, a lot of these guys have said this is the athletic achievement, just getting invited to combine. Then draft will be. We talked to a couple players as they were leaving the hotel just now, and they said, yeah, I've been, you know, trying to figure out what's going to happen. I'm going to go to draft. And like Bobby said, it's going to be a huge moment for them. Then they're going to come into camp, and the coach is going to tell them, I think you might be a USL player.
Yeah, or
you might not make this roster. So it's going to be a long 3 weeks. For a lot of these people.
You're starting from zero, yeah?
Yeah. The worst thing these kids can do is think they've accomplished something. That's one of the biggest issues is you feel like you can take a breath. You can release some anxiety. And the problem is, as the old saying goes, it's 10 times harder from here on out. You haven't accomplished anything. And you are now have to work harder, grind more, compete more. Everything about your soccer life only gets harder from here on out. And if I were to give a single piece of advice to any kid signing this contract, it's buckle in. Get ready for the ride. You know, there is nothing. It's very cool signing on the dotted line. It's very cool telling your friends you have an agent and you have signed a contract. But your life is about to get much harder and much more complicated.
Who did you like from these three games? Who impressed you?
Here's the thing I find interesting. I think Abu Dunlady, there's a guarantee on a wall in Major League Soccer's office that Abu Dunlady will be an all-star. I said that, right? I'm interested to see as the draft goes along, because it will go along, is why not just identify players that can be a part of your team? It doesn't matter what pick number you have, right? Yeah, this guy was the best number 10 in college. But you think a fullback can hang in your league a little bit longer. For example, NYCFC started RJ Allen for a few years at fullback. We've seen New York Red Bull start.
Orlando picked him up, the very city run.
There you go. We've seen New York Red Bull start Chris Duval, just naming a few of guys who aren't superstars. They don't have to be superstars. You also don't have to pick those guys in the second round. If you like someone like that, why not just take a chance on them? So me and Bobby have talked through it a couple times, but for me, Graham Smith was a central midfielder for most of college, played center back his senior year at Denver, played center back here at Combine. I thought he was extremely solid, extremely composed, especially in a team where no one knows each other and no one was really positionally sound. Defensively, I thought Lucas Stauffer had a good Combine. He can play fullback. He played a little time at holding mid. He played left and right. He just seems like a type of guy who will go out there and do a job and stick with people. And then there's a player, Corey Brown from New Zealand, who's an undersized center back and maybe not the quickest fullback, but he seemed throughout Combine to fit in well and play at left center back. Natural left-footed player, New Zealand U20 International.
Let me just throw some numbers out there. Ben Bear, the research bear, put this together. 81 players picked last year in 2017, 42 made an MLS roster, 27 appeared in more than one game in Major League Soccer, only 9 appeared in more than 10 games, 3 appeared in more than 20 games, 29 played on loan in USL from an MLS club, and 24 signed with a USL club. The numbers that stand out to me are just the games played. It's just such a small group of guys. And you look at somebody take the stage and give a speech, and you try to extrapolate where they are on a roster and a depth chart. And so many of them are going to be far down to the extent that they just won't get minutes.
That's especially true this year with new TAM coming in. Yeah. The quality in the starting 11 is going to be raised. So guys that were starting maybe last year maybe are now becoming reserves, and that further pushes these kids down the pecking order.
But I'd actually like to see 2016 more, because with USL, you bring a guy in and then you have a year at USL to learn your system. That's why they go on loan, to develop in the pro game. So I'd actually be more interested to see a year or two or three years ago, because those guys are the guys who come back around, the ones that can hang and come back in. And then you see a guy like Mark Birch who hangs around the league for a while. And so there's guys like that who I'm just fullback obsessed.
Yeah, you
today,
are. You,
clearly. But there,
Jacob Nowinski on the mind, huh?
Yeah, there's guys like that who hang around the league that maybe aren't supposed to, and they find ways to play. Servando Carrasco is a good example as well. It's not his rookie year where he's going to star, but 3-4 years later, Ziggy Schmidt knows he can trust him.
He's Bob Bradley-esque right now, measuring his words. By the way, Mark Birch was taken in the second round, 24th overall, by LA Galaxy in 2006. Putting it out there for you.
So there's a sense that the Super Draft has been devalued because there's less players to find. But to me, the value of those guys is still equally important, if not more important. Everyone talks about the TAM devaluing. No, because what TAM does is it just shifts what's important. You still need domestic players in any team. You still need team-first guys who care in any team. So the fact that in the Super Draft you can't find as many, to me, just makes the Super Draft more important because there's less of them to get. It's still equally as important for your team, and now there's less ways to get them.
By the way, you're also not paying acquisition costs on that. You're
not
dealing
with all the... Yeah, it's absolutely true. The Super Draft's more important. The homegrowns are more important. Finding these dudes that don't hit your cap, whether on the supplemental reserve roster, or even if they do hit your cap, it's at a low number. That's going to become more and more important as more TAM comes in, and as these guys making like 250 to 500 start to become a little...
There's one ubiquitous fact about professional soccer that will never change regardless of the rules and regardless of the era, and it's you need domestic players to make up some core. It's true in every league across the world at every level. You need players from the country who understand it, who understand all of that.
Certainly as long as you have international spots too.
Who impressed you guys? Sam, Bobby? Who are the guys that you looked at? And Bobby, you wrote for MLSsoccer.com an article basically saying, hey, this is how you spot a pro player. Mm-hmm. Who'd you spot?
Smith, the left center back, will move to left back, the New Zealand. Omsberg was very good at defender. I expect Omsberg to go number five to Minnesota. Bolana was a clean center midfielder out of Akron who impressed me in terms of possession. Paul Marie, when I wrote about striking a ball, Paul Marie had good service both in his passes across his body and his crosses.
For me, unfortunately, I wasn't able to watch the games as closely. I was
writing a lot during them. About? Who are the
guys talking about? Omsberg is a guy that has impressed people for sure. Baquero is a guy that's impressed people. I've heard a few teams are trying to trade up to potentially get Baquero. Very technical player. I think we've talked about him a little bit before.
Yeah.
But so those are two guys that I would definitely keep an eye on is kind of risers at the combine. Another one, Ricky Lopez Espin. I've kind of heard good things about him from a few different teams, few different people.
I'm a fan.
So those are three names that I've heard as kind of potential surprises, I guess, on draft day.
As our league develops, ideally every team has a different view of who they want because we want our teams to have more style, more identity, more of a specific philosophy that speaks to the heart of their manager.
Yeah, more diversity.
Ethos.
Not just a 4-2-3-1.
So it's perfectly okay. It's perfectly
3-5-2 this year?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Trends.
We hope 10 clubs spot 10 different guys because that doesn't mean one player is better than the next. It just fits into a system. And that actually has me very excited that there's no consensus.
So Friday, 11 a.m. Eastern, MLSsoccer.com and YouTube. I'll anchor the coverage. We've got Bobby. We've got Matt Doyle. We've got Kaylin Carr. We've got Susanna Collins. You guys are running around the draft floor.
Weeby, don't forget yourself, man. You're going to be there. Sorry, I pulled
Weeby
the gas.
Always starts with himself.
I can respect that.
First name on the team sheet, man. First name on the team sheet. Got to make sure. I'm not putting the C next to my name, but.
Eric Dick, a goalkeeper from Butler, 6'5". Probably the best goalkeeper here. So keep an eye out for that.
We'll see what happens. Stay tuned to that. Before we get out of here, the Timbers signed Peruvian winger Andy Polo. That's a big move for them. You got a little dirt there, maybe?
Yeah, I talked to Timbers GM Gavin Wilkinson about Andy Polo. Basically, this will make them a little bit more direct, I think, than they were last year. You know, if you're putting him on one wing, he's going to go at dudes really, really aggressively. The other thing I talked to Gavin Wilkinson about is he's coming in on a one-year loan with an option to buy. They initially did not want to have him on loan. They wanted to buy him outright from the jump. They had some difficulties with that with Monarcas Morelia and their asking price. So he told me that basically this worked out best for them. Do a loan, and then the option to buy, he thought, was going to be less at the end of the year. That price is, you know, it's written into the contract. So he thought the eventual option to buy would end up being less than what they would have had to pay now to get him permanently.
A reminder, Superdraft goes down on Friday, but that is certainly not the end of movement. TAM, DP, free agency signings, all sorts of news to be made. Chris Pontius is being linked with the LA Galaxy. Right now, we're still waiting on the fates of a lot of guys. The Colorado Rapids appear to have moved on from Ola Kamara. There are rumors that he had an offer from La Liga. Maybe that's some agent scuttlebutt. Who knows? LA Galaxy, I think, certainly still interested. And Sam's reporting that Emma Boateng could be a part of that package as well.
Yeah, so I've heard a couple of different things. One was Giassi Zardes and money, and the number two draft pick, as Paul Tenorio, our good friend, reported today. Another thing I heard is that Emma Boateng could be a part of a package Ema Boateng, I'm sorry, I'm not a broadcaster like
you. Well, if you repeat
like you.
Weeby's mistake, then I got to correct it.
That's fair.
You can't see that. The show
didn't come to a screeching halt or anything,
no.
or anything like that.
No.
Did he go to Akron University or University of Akron?
Not sure which. Inside joke alert. Colorado Rapids, by the way, also looking at strikers. Claudio Kesseru.
Wait, are you going to let me finish my point?
I don't know. After I got smoked here, I was just trying to move it on. Yeah,
All right. So, yeah, basically, Ema Boateng could be a part of that package. It would be for less money. The picture I got would be Boateng, Zardes, maybe some money, maybe the draft pick, maybe a little combination of both.
Need a number 9 in L.A. There's no doubt about that. No doubt. Also, Rapids looking maybe in Europe. League 1, we'll see if it works out for them this window, maybe in the summer, maybe not at all. That's kind of the current state of Major League Soccer. A lot of irons in the fire. Some of them you pull out and it'll be all good. Some of them you'll just leave in there and let them melt. That's what you come to expect from the analogies here on Extra Time Radio Day.
Can I just say one thing? And this might be
actually
me,
no.
This might be me bird dogging, so I don't want to.
Whoa!
Only
oh
one
my
person
God.
Bird dogs at this table.
No. More bird dogs, the better.
Everyone should go on MLSsoccer.com because there's some fantastic videos there. For example, we had a talent show with some of these players who could be drafted, and they are extremely talented.
I actually don't think
that's field.
Has it been published? I don't think it's been published.
I'm pretty sure it has been. Also, There's some controversy right now.
What's that? In the war room or elsewhere?
No, not in the war room.
By the way, Bobby Warshaw's war room is another classic.
Yeah, great one. But no, there was a physical test done here at the Combine. Me and Bobby partook. He easily beat me in the open sprint because he's more flash than substance. On the agility test, which is the one that coaches look at the most, I smoked Bobby, but they didn't take a video. So then we had to redo the video. In the video,
and you just had one 5'10" 5" in you.
The angle chosen, I didn't have as much juice as I did
time. You used all your juice. Yeah, understandable.
Exactly.
I mean, endurance is part of the game, guys.
And then the angle chosen is a controversial angle.
Wow.
It looks like Bobby's closer than he is, even though I still
this
get
is
the
like,
W.
This is like the Zapruder film.
So yeah.
So go check that out. Give us your opinion. Yeah. Of course, Bob Bradley is coming up next. An incredible interview. Stick around for the whole thing. And for those of you on SiriusXM FC channel 157, it's going to take me some muscle memory to get there. The full one is on iTunes. So go subscribe to the pod. Big thanks to Bobby Warshaw, Sam Stachel for joining us. Stick with us. We'll be right back after the break.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Welcome to Extra Time Radio's 1v1 sit-downs out of the 2018 Major League Soccer season. I'm Andrew Wiebe with David Goss and a legend in American coaching circles, Bob Bradley. Bob, how's it going?
Not a legend, but...
not a legend. You don't want legend status. No legend status.
No. Look, okay. The last game that I coached in Major League Soccer was a playoff game in Houston. We lost, got knocked out. I think Houston maybe went on to win MLS Cup that year. And so I've not won a game in the league in a long time. And amazing year, 2017, after a busy, busy stretch of a lot of training sessions and a lot of games. In 2017, I didn't coach one game.
All right, well, that's my first question for you, how much did you miss this? I mean, it was you got to be chomping.
Chomping. Strange year, though. I mean, you know, started early trying to figure out what was coming next. A lot of different talks, bounced around, listened to different people. But I have to say this, in those months, now I had a chance to get to know what was going on at LAFC. I had a chance to meet some of the owners, and get a sense of, the vision that they had. And I had a chance to tell them my ideas. And, in my coaching life, I've always enjoyed challenges, and sometimes you go places where, you know, you understand that when you get there, you just got to sort of run with what they have, try to make the most out of it. But I also was keen on trying to find a situation where I could take my ideas and my experiences and try to put it into action. And so I really had some good discussions with these people. Had a great meeting early one morning with Peter Guber, which I have to say was it's one of my best hour discussions of all time. Such an incredibly smart man, humble. Talking about some of his experiences in sports and how he basically said, look, here's the role I play. If you need me, I'm here. If you don't need me, I'm phone call away, but I understand. But when you're around smart people and people who have vision and have had incredible success, you get excited. So out of all of that, the second half of the year is then trying to figure out how to build a staff and how to start to put a team together. So I've enjoyed that part, but I'm really ready to start training.
We're going to talk a lot about LAFC before we get there. You mentioned it's been 10 years since you've coached in this league. We wanted to ask you about how it's evolved now. Full disclosure, you came in here on fire to come into this interview.
I did.
I want to ask you, if you saw this 10 years ago, would you be happy? Is this league in a place that you wanted it to be 10 years later?
I see all the great things that are going on. And so when I go down Figueroa and I see the stadium, right, and obviously I've been in some of the newer stadiums in the league. I was at MLS Cup this year. The way the city of Toronto has embraced their team. I had a chance to go to Mercedes-Benz and and get a real feel for everything that's going on in Atlanta with their exciting team and the incredible season that they had. So, like, I see all that. But when you say, what do I expect, or how happy am I, you know, look, I have high standards. You know, I still love seeing games where tactically they're good, where you see some real sense of purpose on both teams, where teams are prepared but also willing to take chances, where there's a willingness to go for 3 points and have some attacking ideas, some fluidity, some sense of, on this day, here's the kind of football we need to play in order to not only win the game but have an exciting game and have our fans feel good about what we're trying to do. So do I think that happens all the time? No. I still think that there's days where that we don't see enough of that. But, again, you know, I've been in different places. And so you also have to recognize that, look, the game's not perfect anywhere. And so you appreciate the teams, the clubs, the managers, the players that do manage enough days to make it different. And so when I come in on fire, it's because that's what I want. You know, if I get into discussions with people here, I don't want the discussion to be this superficial, we've got new stadiums and, you know, this is up or this, you know, like, come on, let's go a little more. You know, I've been asked to do interviews. I've been asked to do podcasts since we didn't qualify for the World Cup, and I've not done any because, honestly, there's a million people talking right now. Most of the conversations are poor, all right? No real depth, no real sense. There's people talking about youth development that really haven't ever been there. And so, look, right now I just... I step back, but the one thing that happens is on the inside, with people I know, then I express myself. And I, you know, listen, I'm always going to be a strong voice. I'm going to be a voice of that really hammers away at things that I think are important, and people can take it or leave it. So, you know, it's been an interesting stretch.
What are you hammering away on? What are the topics, the ideas, the things that really get you fired up that you believe need to be the things that we should be discussing as a soccer culture right now?
Well, if I had written a report on where I thought we were before Trinidad, and then a few days later I was asked to do it again, I would have just handed in the same report, all right? So the thing across the board, I just think we still need to be better, right? So we need, we have more academies. Well, we need better academy directors. We still need better coaches. We still need better coaching education. If all of that's done the right way, then yes, we have players that are benefiting from all that. And now we start to have teams that look a little bit different. One of the things I'm terrible at is I'm not able to always give my philosophy. You know, sometimes people want straight answers. You know, it's funny in these interviews that people are talking about with the players, but the players ask questions. So they'll say, "What's your philosophy?" Right? And I'll say, "Well, look, I think when we have the ball, we've got to have the willingness, the confidence, the bravery to try to play, all right? And in order to try to play, that means we've got to have some sense as to how to move it, how to make little openings, and how to create options so that the guy on the ball can find the right play. And then we've got to work every day so he knows what the right play is. And now, at certain moments, we've got to have a real sense that when there's an advantage, what does that look like? And when an advantage develops, do we know how to go and what kind of moves lead us to goal, and how good are we in those moments? And then we lose the ball. And where are we when we lose it? Do we have a chance to win it back right away? And if we can't win it back, then where's our next moment to try to start defending? And so you try to say to them that, look, you're all here because you're good players. But somehow in all sports, the best coaches manage to say, to create an environment where even though they're good, they say, you know, there's a lot you don't know. Yeah. One of the greatest things I can say about Guardiola is this. The Hinkes Bayern Munich, before he got there, was an incredible team. Right? So they were more successful than any of Pep's teams. Right? But still, when Pep got to Bayern Munich, to a man, all these guys that had success under Hinkes, that had success for the German national team, that have been winners all over the world, to a man, they all felt that he was trying to make them better, that he had some capacity to challenge them, open up their brains, say, come on, you know, this is how you can do this better. And so, look, I try to do that. And that doesn't mean I can get in everybody's head, and that doesn't mean I'm Guardiola, but, you know, the idea that we're going to have a football environment where every day when we come in, we're going to try to figure out, come on, how do we play? How do we do this better? How can you become a better player? And so, you know, I try to get that across. And so when I read or hear people who sort of in such general ways talk about our game, and then we throw out things like pay for play, and then we, you know, we still are a big country. We've got all sorts of different kind of neighborhoods. We've got diversity, which should be a plus, and should be taken as a plus. So that means we've got to make sure that somehow we reach out to every neighborhood, that we make sure that the game is available in different ways, in different places. It might be futsal, it might be courts, it might be small fields, it might be, but that the game is available, and that if kids want to play, there's an absolute opportunity for them to play. And then when that happens, we've got to have ways across the whole country to make sure that little by little we can identify talent, and that talent starts to get challenged and pushed along a little bit. And like I said, I don't think that that was, that's anything new. So, you know, if I'm with Manfred Schellscheid and I'm coaching the Union Lancers and we win a couple of Maguire Cups, and there's a couple of kids that their mothers, the fathers aren't around, and the mothers can't get them to training, and they can't afford to play, then in the Union Lancers, there were just other parents. Somebody else picked the kid up, all right? And the parents all threw in a little extra money, and that kid played on the team. And, you know, it was just because the people like Manfred believed in the game, and they tried to make sure that the kids in that area were properly challenged, properly taught. If there was a kid from somewhere else and he showed up and he was a good player and then that could help the whole thing, then they figured out a way to bring him. And Manfred Schellscheid is in Union, but there were others, and there still are others. And so we need to continue to try to reach out to make these things better. Before development academies, there's good clubs. And many of those clubs years ago figured out that we've got to have scholarship programs. So don't get me wrong. We still haven't got it right. We still have a lot of places where kids do fall through the cracks. But the idea that we're going to improve, look harder, make sure kids have places to play. You know, one of the unknown stories about Princeton, New Jersey, when I was there, is this, that it's a beautiful town, beautiful university. And I used to sometimes jog in different parts of town. And I knew that there was a section of town where there were a lot of Hispanic families. And every time I ran through that neighborhood, there were kids playing soccer. And so when I finally finished doing stuff in Union with Manfred, now I said, okay, let's see if we can start trying to do a little more down in the Princeton, Mercer County area. And I said to the people at the Princeton Soccer Association, you got all these kids that are playing soccer all the time. None of them are playing in the Princeton Soccer Association. So you're not doing a good job. And so until all those kids are playing, then something's wrong. And so little by little, we found ways to make that happen. And so I think that there's been plenty of examples of that. We need to keep doing it. But, you know, in the moment, yeah, I don't like the dialogue. So.
All of these ideas you have, all the things that you want for U.S. soccer, why was LAFC the right job? Is it an opportunity for you to build something for people to look to, something that you can build to maybe try and change the dialogue?
No, it's what I said before. Sometimes you take jobs. You know, I go to Swansea, and it's a chance to coach in the Premier League. And you go there, and the team's not doing well, and basically you're trying to establish yourself and your ideas, and you know that in the short run, it's just, can we manage enough points, right? And you have total confidence that the way you train, the way you challenge players, you know all that'll be fine. But whether you can take enough points in a short run of time to breathe and have a foundation to really do what you want, that's like rolling dice on a table. And the Premier League's a tough place. And so if you lose a few games in a row, you know, the eighth game was home to Sunderland. We won 3-0, and everybody was pretty happy. We went away, and we started well against West Brom, and we lost, and we started okay against Middlesbrough, and we lost. And by the time we came home for the third game, the atmosphere in the side of the stadium was tense, and the players knew it. And so, you know, that's the nature of that league. So you go to a place like that, and it's just, can I get my arms around this? Can we take points in the short run? And then when you don't, then obviously that's just the way it is. And that's the way it is for Frank de Boer or Bob Bradley or whoever. I mean, it's been plenty of 11-game stretches since I left Swansea that have been the same or less, okay, because that's what happens in that league, right? But while all that's going on and you're excited about the Premier League, I'm still looking around the football world and, you know, I still see the great run a team like Ajax has in Europa League last year. I see young players and I see a club that has never lost its identity. Well, maybe a few times it sort of started to lose it, but some part of the Johan Cruyff philosophy came back and they
corrected their course, perhaps?
Yeah. Wasn't always easy. They had some tough times around there. But when you see that, then you also, it brings you back to the fact that for me over the years, I do have my ideas and my belief on what football should look like and what a good environment is and how you create an identity and what training should look like every day. And so I've always sort of had the idea that when I come back to MLS, I'm going to try to find a place where I can take my ideas and turn it into something. And I really felt like LAFC was exactly that spot.
So you drive down Figueroa, you see the stadium going up. That's the facilities side. And everyone can see the glitter and the glamour. And you go out to a rally, and there's 5,000 fans there.
Incredible.
And I talk to people in your club, and they're like, we had no idea. It just kind of happened.
Yep.
The community aspect of it is growing really fast. We'll get to that. The squad is still 11 players. Preseason is a week from now.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a building process for you in this club. Do you feel like you're on schedule, on time? Do you feel any sort of anxiety about the number of guys that are there and you can count on? Or is that going to be built and we just don't know about it yet?
It's slow right now. That's the way it is. And I spent a lot of time traveling in the last, 3 or 4 months. You identify good players, but even after you identify that player, figuring out if he's a real possibility, what's his price, does he want to come, who's the agent, who's not the agent, you name it, it's slow. I think we've made a lot of progress. You know, building a team in MLS is interesting because it's done on so many levels. Obviously, Carlos Vela's first, so that's a DP. You're working a little bit on other DPs, then at a certain point, the end of the season rolls around, and now there's some free agents. And the next thing you know, you're spending time looking at free agents because you need domestic players, and now you haven't put some of the other top pieces in place, and now you're filling in other spots. And so it doesn't follow a perfect order, but I think what happens is this. You have this idea in your head of what you want your team to look like. And every day, with every discussion, that picture changes just a little bit, all right? The big idea of what you want it to be never changes, but the small details do change. And, you know, you're constantly thinking that, you know, what's our midfield going to look like? And, you know, if is it going to be 1 and 2? Is it going to be 2 and 1? If we have these two guys, you know, behind them, can we still play a player that we still think passing-wise is different? You know, I still believe in players that can think and play. And so, you know, I appreciate the teams that still try to put smart, intelligent, creative players on the field. So you think like that, but you know, you also need some balance. So, you know, you have good discussions. We have, by now, really good staff. We challenge each other. So, not there yet. We'll have a good group to begin training. That can also include some trialists, maybe some guys we draft. But there's still pieces to be put in place, so a lot of work to do.
You mentioned number one. You have the number one draft pick here, and you're watching these combine games. You're doing interviews with the guys.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the talent level, maybe not on the field in the combine, because it's such a bizarre event in a lot of ways when it comes to the competition level, but the scouting you've done, the talent level, are there guys in this draft that you think can impact this team in a real way in 2018? What's your kind of mindset, big picture, towards this draft?
There's some interesting players. And I think when you build a team, you're trying to get as many guys that you think are good footballers, good guys, guys that want to get better, guys that you think can be challenged and where you can help them see another side of the game or how they can get better. So I think there's some interesting guys. You know, when you do interviews here, one of the things that's interesting is you're just trying to get a sense of each guy. Like, how'd you get here? Like, what was it like? What teams did you play on? You know, oftentimes for me, I know the clubs. Many times I know coaches they've played for. I might, you know, in some cases, even though I might somehow have contact with players that they play with. You know, my nephew is on the team at the University of Virginia, and so when Eddie Akpotu comes in, I mean, these Right to Dream kids, the journey of these boys, you know, I've had a chance because I've coached some Right to Dream players in other places, but like, these guys are so special. I mean, what stories, right? And so when he comes in, he's got this big smile and he just says, I've been waiting to meet you. You know, and I'm like, you know, so I'm giving him a big hug. And I said, do you know who Bo Bradley is? And he goes, yes, I know. And so I now point to Kenny Arena and I say, do you know who Bruce Arena is? Because he's at UVA.
Of course, yeah.
And he goes, yes. And I go, do you know who this is? And he looks at him and he goes, he looks like Bruce Arena. I said, yes, it's his son. So, you know, these are special kids. You know, you have other kids in the draft. Yeah, some are from development academies, and the path is more straightforward. But, you know, you have kids that played on good club teams and said, I'm not playing in the development academy. I want to play high school, right? And so, you know, they come from different places. Some are from parts of the country where, you know, the football around them is good. They've had really good coaches and good experiences. And I'll tell you what, there's some talented kids in this draft that didn't come from what you would call, you know, the top normal spots, all right? And, you know, in some cases, there's a couple that still played 3 sports in high school. That's pretty rare, all right? And now they're concentrating on soccer, and they're excited to do it, and, you know, they still feel they have a big upside. So, you know, you're trying to size up every one of them and think, if I get a player like this in a good environment, how quickly is he going to pick up things? How motivated is he? So, you know, the interviews You know, I mean, I read some of the answers that come out. I don't know what the questions were to produce those answers. I mean, because for me, it's just simple. It's like, you know, how'd you get here? You know, what I say to guys sometimes, do you watch football? Yeah, okay. Is there any players you watch that you don't watch because you like them, but you actually watch because you think there's something in him, in the position or the physical attributes, something in him where you think that fits me, right? And that's a positive sign. A lot of them are on target, you know. I mean, I'll give you a good one. When we were watching Gordon Wilde, I said, yeah, you know, there's a little bit of Lucas Podolski there, right?
There's
a little bit of Lucas Podolski. So now Gordon Wilde's in there, and I said, listen, you know, do you watch football? Is there anybody that you've watched? And he goes, yeah, Lucas Podolski. And then, you know, my young assistants were impressed at that. Yeah. They thought, you know, guess what? Maybe this guy isn't so stupid after all, you know? So, yeah, that part is good, you know? So for me, you know, you come, you watch. Even before you talk to them, when you watch, you get a little sense as to, you know, where they've been. And then you talk to them and you get a little more information and then try to figure out who are the guys that fit in.
There's plenty more Bob Bradley to come. More on the other side of the break. Stick with us.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com. Or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Just know that I want you, I'll take the fall and the fault tonight. So I'll give you all the love I never gave before I left. Just know that I want you back.
You talked about the big picture and filling in the little pieces. The high end, though, in MLS is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you're still a part of this TFC team that's driven by those DPs. You've got two in place already. What can Diego Rossi and Carlos Vela be for this franchise, for this squad? Can they be guys that lead for you? Obviously, Rossi much younger and Vela much more experienced.
Yeah, I mean, for Carlos, it's a big challenge, right? And he knows it. So, you know, I mean, can he come here and be an exciting top player? You know? I mean, in some ways, can he come here and be Messi of MLS? I mean, scary to throw Messi into anything, but the bottom line is that for Carlos, given everything he's done, he has still special talent, and so can we get that out of him? So, you know, he's excited to be in Los Angeles. You know, he left Cancun when he was probably 15. Obviously, you know, he then goes to Guadalajara first, and then he's on to London. Then he's off to San Sebastian and does really well at Sociedad. But he was, you know, he made his mind up. It was time for a new challenge, and he wanted to come to Major League Soccer, and he was really excited about Los Angeles. But he also knows that there's a lot now riding on what happens on the field for him, and he's excited about that. And so, you know, I want to challenge him the right way. You know, Diego Rossi's now different. Now we're into this sort of young DP category. You guys know Peñarol is a big club in Uruguay, and if you play at Peñarol, Maxi Rodriguez, Walter Gargano, you're playing with guys that know how to win. And so if you're a young player and you're getting time at Peñarol, then your pedigree in terms of competing and knowing what the game is about, your pedigree's high. And Diego's a humble kid. When he was a little younger, he was mainly a striker. Now, in the last season, he's used more tilted either way, but he still does a very good job of coming from wide areas and getting to the goal, scores some really good goals. He's fast, you know, he's deceptively fast. When certain moments come, he can take off. So it's exciting to work with him. So we have one that's more seasoned. Because certainly La Liga and everything that Carlos has done has prepared him to really know what the challenges would be like. And then on the other hand, you have a young one that is determined to break through here. He he knows exactly what happened in Atlanta, and he knows those players. And so when young South American players come to Major League Soccer and do well, believe me, the rest of these guys see it. So that's a great thing. So, yeah, he's excited.
Those two DPs?
MLS that's fans, two.
MLS fans know there are three slots.
Yes, you're right.
Is there any sort of feeling that you need to have that in place in this window, or are you willing to wait? What sort of profile positionally or even just generally might you look for in something like that?
We're in a bunch of discussions. I still, when I'm talking football with you guys, to have the kind of team I want, you have to have a good midfield. And so you have to have players in the midfield who can think and players who can move and you can control a game because the passing, the fluidity, all that part is worked on and taken care of. So we're in some good discussions with midfielders. I think bringing Benny Fahavier helps because when you get good football going and Benny can be a part of it, it's only going to be better. Benny's a clever player. He's got subtle ways to get you on the wrong foot. He can slip certain passes through the defense. Sometimes he's clever at a ball that it just chips over a defender. He's got an ability to score in and around the box, just outside the box. So I think Benny's got football in him, and now we've got to have some other guys that do as well. So you do interviews and you say that Barcelona had Busquets and Xavi and Iniesta, and so we have Benny, and so we still got work to do.
Tell me there's any small chance, 0.1%, that maybe you get Mohamed Aboutrika to come out of retirement and come and play for LAFC?
Yeah, he's not. He's retired, but
Trika, what a legend.
Trika is one of the greatest guys that I've ever been around. And, my disappointment when we didn't make it, when we won 7 of 8, but obviously had this disaster in Kumasi. Was knowing that Trika wasn't going to get to play in a World Cup, but Trika knew and I knew that Salah and Nene and Agassi and all these other guys now, we hope that maybe some of what happened the last go-around would help. And so I'm really proud that these guys are going to get the chance. Everybody knows Salah now.
That's a fact.
He's on fire. He's a great guy. From the first time I started working with him, his under-20 coach, D.I.L. Said, was my assistant. And so the under-20 World Cup in Colombia was in September of 2011. I got there in October. We started bringing some of the young guys into camps. February 1st was Port Said, the massacre. So at that point, there's no games, and so all we can live on is camps and going outside the country for friendly. So it was in that time frame that now all these young guys had the chance, every camp, every match, to get their feet on the ground. And so by the time we played the first two World Cup qualifiers in June against Mozambique and Guinea, Salah was already established. The understanding on the field between Trika and Salah, somewhere in your archives, our winning goal against Guinea to win 3-2 in Conakry was late in the match, and it was Trika slipping a great little pass to Salah. Salah, with his trademark run from outside in, starting on the right, coming inside, scoring with his left foot by bending it into the far corner. So it was a great win in Conakry, and I'm excited that those guys have done well. Omar Gaber was in all those camps. He's great friends with those guys. He's the same age. He was on that same U20 team. And Omar is a real personality. He's smart. When I was there, Salah spoke some English. Nene at that time, none. Actually, now it's not bad. But Omar actually, throughout that whole time, spoke pretty good English. He's smart. And so, very well liked. for all you digital content people. I think he's got a high number of followers on Instagram and stuff like
Tell
that.
So come on over.
Check it out. Come on. One of you guys get on it right now. I think he's got 1.3 million followers on Insta. So.
Oh, that's not bad.
So I don't know.
Why do next interview.
How do I know?
Yeah.
Because I'm way smarter than most people think. All right? I promise you. All right?
I don't think anybody's done.
Yeah, no. Look, I don't tweet, but when you live outside the country, Twitter is a way to stay current, all right? And so I follow, all right? And I follow some people in terms of politics. I follow some football people. I follow some clubs. These days, I think it's interesting. I've learned a lot over the years in things like sports science and analytics by just saying, look, this stuff is growing. I've been around some different people. Years ago, I interviewed for the Michelin job, and the ownership at Michelin is the same ownership at Brentford, so that's Matthew Benham. And you guys know who Ted Knutson is?
Of course, yeah. Okay. I've hosted Sloan Sports the last 3 years. He was on the panel last year.
Good. So when I went to interview for Michelin, I didn't go to Denmark. I went to London, and I went to the company, and they gave me their ideas on football, which was all numbers. And that's the first time I met Ted. And I really like him. I stay in touch with him. And I have a back and forth with him and some of these other guys because, yeah, it's important to understand in order to know how to use it as a coach. I don't buy into all of it. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes, I'll tell Ted that your radars have interceptions, but they don't have recoveries. All right? And Opta's definition of a interception and Opta's definition of a recovery are make no sense, right? So there are times when a midfielder can read a situation, move over into the right position, see the ball coming, and because he's positioned perfectly, it comes right to him, and he makes the first pass going forward, and it goes into a counter. And because he saw it all coming, was in the right spot, I think they call that a recovery. And if another midfielder is not in the right spot, and now the ball gets played, and at the last second he runs across and slides and gets his foot in and knocks it out of bounds, I think they call that an interception, even though the ball went out of bounds. And so I'll say to Ted, explain that to me. And how come you don't use recoveries? And he'll give me his reasons. But, you know, whether it's that or expected goals or whatever, yeah, I've enjoyed using Twitter as a way to just keep sharp. And so when I read bad articles, when I see some stuff that comes out in MLS, so I have a question for you guys. Here's a good question, you know. If a coach prepares a bad game plan, okay, or puts the wrong guy on the field, then, you know, obviously he loses credibility, right? So now, if a journalist writes an article and you read it and you think there's not one thing in there that makes any sense, or that's just wrong, or that's like, should I treat that journalist with respect still, or should I just get him off my list?
I think it could go back and forth, but I don't know that you want to cut someone off after one moment.
No, but how about a few?
And then I agree with you.
No,
I think everybody determines credibility in their own
absolutely
way and
me too.
So I think that everybody has a decision to make, right?
Yeah, no, and look, I say that because, you know, a long time ago, in a press conference, somebody had written something that was just wrong, and I happened to say, you know, I don't know where you got that from, but that's wrong. And the press conference had like 50 people in it. And afterwards he came to me and he said, I just wish you hadn't said that in front of everybody. And I said, yeah, you're probably right, that wasn't nice. But the article you wrote got read by way more
exactly
than 50 people.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, look, you got to have thick skin. And so give and take. You know, I came in here obviously giving you guys a hard time.
Yeah.
But I do think that, you know, real discussions, and again, I come here and I do the best I can, but I can't. There's certain things that, you know, I got to be a little careful publicly at times. But behind the scenes during this tough period, we need more real discussions, you know. You know, when Alexi does this rant at halftime, honestly, it's just a circus rant. It has nothing to do with football. So I'd say that right now. It's just, and so anybody who even bothers commenting on that, it's just, that has nothing to do with football. That has nothing to do with the U.S. team. That's just some guy, and it's more about self-status and the whole bit. And so I just, that stuff annoys me, right? And if it's Stephen A. Smith and that's what he's paid to do, then I get, sort of get it, and then you decide, okay, am I going to watch that? But then every now and then I think, well, you know what? I sort of remember that Alexi played on the national team, and that in some form or fashion, he's supposed to be the voice of an ex-national team player talking about things. And so in moments like that, yeah, I get, honestly, the whole thing just throws me off track. So I just don't feel like we get at the real issues enough. And I think that that's an issue right now. So we'll see what goes on. But it's a tough period, I think.
Well, we're always open for you to tell us all when we're wrong.
I think, we I can raise my hand and say that Bob has definitely told me what I've been.
I appreciate that.
I'll give you my email and you can send me things.
No, I don't do it on email. Come on, man. It's got to be done in person. That's much better.
Okay, I appreciate that.
So, agreed.
Or, you know, occasionally, you know, okay, an exchange of emails. But no, look. Look, good dialogue's important, right?
Yeah.
And our game has come a long way. But I tell you,
well, you talk about the generalizations, and that's what we've run into is the, you said pay to play offhand. It's constant with the 7 or 10 buzzwords, but it's really hard to find people. I think because the problem.
I'll give you a good one. Look, I engage some of the promotion relegation guys, okay? And so I'll do them a favor and not tell you their names today, right? And I appreciate the passion that some of them have, okay? But every now and then, one will try to tell me that, like, this is going to solve everything. And I'll say, look, I've been in this game way longer than you, okay? And we need more good coaches. And just by having promotion and relegation tomorrow, we don't all of a sudden have way more good coaches, okay? So you've got to try to understand. And you know, I gave him a hard time because I said to him, it's easy for you to think that you're on the outside. And, you know, it's like the bit where you grew up on the wrong side of the railroad tracks. And I said to him, so you think I grew up on the right side? You know, listen, after I didn't win a gold cup, I got exiled for 6 years, my man.
Yeah.
All right? And so, you know, don't bother trying to pretend that, you know, you're on the, look, we're all in this game together, all right? And promotion and relegation is a good discussion, but there are plenty of promotion relegation people where that's their agenda, and they try to take every other football thing that should be discussed and turn it into promotion and relegation, and that's a waste of time.
Let's talk about OFC, the season coming up here.
You're going to have a hard time editing this interview.
I mean, we're just going to run this thing unfiltered.
All right, good.
Put it out into the world.
Good.
You have a photographic memory, it seems to me, in previous sessions that we've had, and in this one, games, moments of your career, things that you believe in, you now will make new moments, new memories like that. What do you expect Bank of California Stadium to be like? What do you expect the first home game to be like? What do you expect all these kind of seminal moments in the building of a club that you now get to be both a part of and a leader within? I mean, it's an opportunity that's really is once in a lifetime.
Sure, first game. First impression. So what has to happen? What do you say before a first game? You say, go out and play football, all right? And, you know, the things we've worked on for X number of weeks, go, you know, play. Show people what we're all about. Let's really go out and play our football. By that time, you try to establish what our football is. Yeah, you want to win. But that idea that over time you have an identity. One of the incredible things about LAFC is this. We have a chance to connect with the heart of the city, right? And, you know, if you've been lucky to travel around the world and do it in a football way, there's a lot of great clubs. But the ones that have the stadiums right smack in the city, you know, there's something that's so unique and so special about that. And so, you know, I spent some days in Bilbao a few years back. They have the Thinking Man's Film Festival, and they did We Must Go, which was one of the documentaries when I was in Egypt, and they'd asked if I would be a guest of the club and come and speak. And it fit in, I think I was in Norway, but it worked. It was in preseason, and we had a weekend. And, you know, I had been there before, but Bilbao is an example where that club and obviously their identity as a Basque club and how they're so proud, and they say that any kid that comes through and is a good player knows that he has a chance to play in our first team, right? They see that as an advantage compared to Barcelona and Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. They say, this is our advantage, right? And then that stadium right there in Bilbao. And so any place where there's that identity between the city and the club and those fans, and we have that chance. And so there's a lot of great people at LAFC. The young millennial crowd there is pretty damn impressive, I got to say. Whenever I go to the Experience Center, there's staff meetings on Friday, and you go, and everybody says a little something, and, you know, I try to come up with a little something different for them every week, because when you go there, the energy and the vibe from these people, and they have driven things, some have been there 2 and 3 years, and they've created momentum, and so the responsibility now is on us, and then the team and the players, to be able to take that momentum and turn it into something every time on the field. So that starts from the first game. It's a big responsibility. Like I said, you always want to win, but there's this part of establishing who you are and how you play and what you're all about. That's identity. And, you know, I've, in 1993, our Princeton team made the Final Four, and there's still guys that played for that team that have a copy of a letter that I sent to them before the season. And so that's a long time ago, but it's me at that time having this idea that I wanted to, on paper, with a letter, which nobody does letters anymore, but, you know, basically say, come on, this is what we're going to be about, right? But it wasn't something that I dreamed up and then just print it out. It was a process to get to that point. But then the final sort of letter is to say, come on, let's not forget. We said this. We did this. And so, you know, I believe in that. You know, I think that's what happens in good clubs. Yeah, I think that's what good leaders are all about. And so, I couldn't be more excited.
As an expansion team, we saw Atlanta and Minnesota kind of have two different seasons last year. We've seen Seattle coming on a high, Portland struggle in their first year. Where can an expansion
How about
squad?
Chicago Fire? You guys never to, seem to talk about...
I was about, just about to okay, say, every Andrew. Year when they don't win Cup, you at home you, like...
No, that's not true.
You didn't let me get there.
Oh, no, okay. No,
I was in a flow. I was getting
there. We don't need to. I'm kidding you. Look, let's talk the current situation, all right?
But where can a team fit in? How can you be successful first year?
Yeah, I mean... You get the right players. You create the right identity. You start to play football. You gain confidence. And then you have a chance. And so, it's silly before the season to know exactly where you're going to finish. But as the season unfolds, you start to get a sense of whether you have something. And if you do a good job, if the players, you know, I spoke about what happens when they come in every day. And if you create something where every time they come in, that sense of purpose, that football, the details of movement, the details of reactions, the mentality, you know, the whole thing, right? If you can create that, then at a certain point, the players are ready to take it and run with it, and then you have a chance. And so it's too early. What did you say, 11 guys?
Yeah, I think it's 11.
Yeah, so, yeah. You know, that's enough for a team.
Don't have a goalkeeper yet. Who are you putting the gloves on?
We do have
on?
A
hey,
goalkeeper.
Tyler Miller.
Oh, Miller, yeah. I announced the expansion draft. I know that.
Okay, so, you know, somebody said the other day, if you had a game right now, what would you do? Okay, so Tyler Miller.
Boom.
It's the goalie. Okay. Given what we have right now, Steven Bettishore can play on the right. Has that been announced yet?
No.
Has not.
Okay, I just announced that.
Yeah,
okay.
There are rumors that have.
Okay, well, if that rumor comes true,
fruition,
then I have just announced that Steven Bettishore could play on the right, mm-hmm. but so can Omar Gaber. Okay.
Can he play wing?
I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
He'll use his line.
You know, sorry.
Okay. Walker Zimmerman, Laurent Simon, Jordan Harvey.
Can we ask questions while you're going? Or wait?
Sure. No, no, go ahead.
Simon and Zimmerman, how do those two fit together? Because they're both guys who seem to like to attack the ball. They're both guys who have played with someone else who maybe sits back a little bit more and reads the play while letting them go forward and try and stop attacks early. How do you see them fit together?
I like, look, there's some teams defensively that when they attack, they're very good at, you guys know terminology? In some parts of the world, they call it rest defense. In other places, Scandinavia, they say offensive marking. But what that is that when you attack, you are doing a good job of taking the people who are behind the ball and not just having them stand behind the ball, but push them into certain spots so that when the other team wins the ball, you have already started to take care of problems, right? And so there are teams that are, I guess, proactive in how they start to defend. So all of Guardiola's teams are like that, right? And so what you see is that they have an ability oftentimes to win the ball back faster in their own half, and that they stay compact because they're pushed up quicker and they're not just backing up, right? And so I think that you are trying to get center backs who aren't afraid to step up and make plays. You know, we all hear Pep sometimes, and he says, you know, to play center back at Man City, it's a big job and it's really hard. Well, he's right, because what he's saying is, yeah, there's a lot of space back there, all right? But if you want to be a certain kind of team, then you have to challenge guys to say, you know, and if one goes, the other's in good position, and where's the outside backs? And, you know, and so this is part of, you know, if you're saying to your team, come on, let's be brave, let's play football, you know, there's a lot of people that say, ah, what does that mean, okay? But then I said earlier that you establish ideas of what that means. So what that means is that we're not just backing up. We're not just dropping off. We're not just, you know, you see situations with some teams where you're attacking. The right back has moved up. You lose the ball. The right back's 3 yards away from the ball, all right? But somehow he puts his head down and he runs back into his position. The other backs all drop back. And then they start defending deeper. Look, some teams like to defend deeper and maybe use the space to counter. That's fine. But there's other moments where you can say to the right back, the ball's 3 yards away. Go and press.
Yeah.
Okay? And when you go first, everyone else can rearrange. And so this becomes something you work on. And this becomes then part of your identity. And this becomes your football. And then when you say, come on, let's be brave, let's step up, then they understand. So for me, having guys that aren't afraid to step up and having two of them, I don't see that as a problem. I see that as a plus.
So Jordan Harvey at left back.
Jordan Harvey at left back. Maybe in the same rumored release about Bedeschor is Callum Mallis, who for me, you look at guys who have played in the league. And I spoke earlier about this sort of ridiculous part that you haven't put some other pieces in place, but now you're making decisions about domestic guys because you got to have a certain number on the roster, and you know. But then you look for guys and think, yeah, I've seen that guy play a lot. What's he like? And so I've watched Calum, and you know, times in Montreal, he's been okay. But I also think that it's never been clear what his role in the midfield is. Okay. I think he runs around, he tries to cover ground, he tries to make passes. So I'm going to work with him as a deeper midfielder. Now, will he be the best one we have? I don't know. You know, if Busquets comes, then Caleb's going to be second. But I am excited to work with him in that way and say, look, you know, this is an area of the field where I think you can grow, where you don't have to run all over. In fact, don't run all over.
Yeah.
All right. But understand that if something's happening 10 yards up from you, you can step up and you can be the first guy. Understand that when we have the ball, the little ways that you drift, find space, can be the first pass. That's important. The idea that you can still play passes forward, that you can make good decisions. So, yeah, I'm going to try to work with him a little bit like that. That also means we have Benny. Yes, we need another midfielder, but since today we're talking about 11 And this rumored Steven Bettishore is going to play as the right back. Then today, honestly, Omar Gaber could also play in the midfield because he's done that for Zamalek. And then we have Carlos Vela, Marco Urania, Diego Rossi. Haven't spoken yet about Latif Blessing. So
loved that pick, by the way.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we have some interesting attacking players. You know, I watch guys and have an idea how they play. You know, I think Latif has played well from both the left and the right, and actually in other moments he's played inside as a whatever nine or false nine or something, and he comes off defenders.
He's not a big guy, but he's. I mean, I've seen him.
Messi's not big either.
I've seen him winning headers in the box on the movement, the shiftiness. He's strong. Yeah. He can dance a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's plenty of ways to play football, and again, when I challenge football thinking, I mean, you know, somebody said to me, you know, you have these discussions here this week, well, we need a six, okay? And you say, out of curiosity, do you care if your six can pass, all right? Do you care if he can pass forward? Defensively, are you just worried about destroying, or if he's smart and takes away certain things and stop other things from happening? Is that good too? Do you see that? So, you know, there's all these different variations on how you play. And so, you know, if you're a team and you get pressed and you're not good with the ball, and now you have to put a lot of balls forward, probably that's not an easy game for a small, quick striker up there trying to handle long balls. But if you can play out of pressure, and if the striker can come away from the defenders, and the defenders aren't sure whether they should come tight or what's going to happen, or if they come tight, then you've got wide guys who are now running into the gaps, then all of a sudden you create football problems. And so that's what good teams do. And so I don't believe in this. You know, everybody profiles players, but you know, I've seen enough football over the years that, you know, when you see Napoli, and then you see Mertens playing as a striker, right? If you were at the combine this week, somebody would say, well, he's not a nine.
Yeah,
and I would say, well, I don't know. He's doing all right. Napoli's
like
not bad,
out,
so
yeah.
You know. So you know, I'm not so big on that. So you know, for me, you got to see football. You got to understand that players come in different sizes and shapes. You look for talent. You look for ways to work with the talent. I've always enjoyed the idea that, you know, when you see a player, you sometimes have a picture of another player that you think is a good example for him. You know, I watch certain moments when I see Latif Blessing on the left and the right, and I think, you know, if we could ever manage to help him improve as much as Guardiola has helped Raheem Sterling improve, right, that there's some part of that that could be helpful for him to use, you know, look at this guy, look what's happened here. And so, you know, you're constantly trying to find ways to connect players with football, you know, and I enjoy that part, you know, so that's what I do.
I think I can speak for both of us that we could do this.
We could do this for 4 hours.
All right.
We can't, though. We've got to end this. I'm excited to see your team play this year, to see where things go. We've
Good.
Got an 11 now. We'll see where it ends up. Bob Bradley, LAFC. Thank you so much, Coach.
All right, man.
Bob Bradley, he says he's not a legend, but, Dave, that was a legendary interview. One
it's
of
the greatest.
One of the most enjoyable we've ever done, and one of the most intense that we've ever done as well. I mean,
yeah.
I was concentrated on meeting Bob's gaze for the entirety of that 55 minutes.
He came in on fire off set. Then we sat and talked for like 20 minutes before we started the actual interview. And then after the interview, he stood up and we spoke for 20 or so minutes longer. Like, it was amazing. And he's got an encyclopedic knowledge of the game, and he's passionate, and he's passionate about more than just soccer, it seems like, but he's driving all through soccer right now.
A little bit impatient, though. It feels he wants to be on that training field. He wants to have more than the, 11 guys, or I guess 12 now with Callum Malice official, and it'll be 13 when Stephen Betashore hits the pages, but he basically confirmed that one as well. He wants to be out there, and I get the feeling that nothing goes as fast as Bob Bradley wants it to go.
Do you think there's an element for him of, like, I've been gone for a while, and you guys don't think I'm the greatest at this anymore, and I'm ready to get back and start winning?
I don't think it's necessarily in those words, but I think it is, like, when I left, I was not appreciated in the way I think I should have been.
Right.
Both from Major League Soccer and the U.S. national team, I think.
Yeah.
And now I think he sees an opportunity to come in and, you know, be the competitive guy that he is and throw some elbows around and try to prove himself all over again. I think those are the things that get Bob going every single day. You can tell he takes things personally, and I think that's part of what really motivates him and part of what makes him special and ultimately is part of what make his team special, because he gives that to them, whether it be in the form of motivation or the way they play. I'm excited to see how his team plays. Up close, personal, 34 games plus Open Cup, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see what he does, how he adjusts, how he forces other coaches to adjust, how he plays differently than maybe the rest of this league because he has different experiences. Certainly unique experiences for an American coach.
Yeah, I fully agree. I cannot wait to see that team put together. We know there's pieces left. But we can kind of get an idea from what he's saying. They're going to be aggressive. They're going to try and be fluid on the ball and aggressive off the ball, I think. We heard him talk about that. So you're starting to get an idea of what it's going to look like. And quite honestly, Vela and Rossi coming off the wings without knowing anything else about that team is going to be fun to watch. And he described Vela and Messi. Obviously, that's a tough comparison. But the way this team's looking like it's coming together – I mean, Diego Rossi is only 19 years old.
Yeah.
So there's a lot on Carlos Vela's shoulders. He's been a really good goal scorer in league play throughout his career. Didn't really stick with Mexico for most of his career. Hasn't really gotten called in. He's not been the guy a lot of times. Sociedad had one or two years where they got to Europe, and it was his goals, but he wasn't the leader of a team. So that's going to be an interesting aspect to see how
that plays
out.
Not just a leader
out.
Of a team, but a leader of a brand new team,
right.
One that's being started from scratch. Bob has some really, really set ideas about leadership and how to create an environment. Now it's his job to do that. I can imagine he is just chomping at the bit. Let us know what you think. 401-206-0MLS is the Hot Take Hotline. ExtraTimeMLSsoccer.com. If you want to email us, of course, the offseason rolls on. Preseason is around the corner. We don't stop talking about it. We want you to be a part of the conversation. And make sure you tune in on Friday to the MLS Super Draft, 11 a.m., MLSsoccer.com, and YouTube. Complete coverage of every single pick, both from New York in the studio and Philadelphia on the ground for interviews and everything else you're looking for. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time.